Hi there, listener, and welcome to the first in our annual look at the best snow sports equipment available for winter 2026. We're going to be looking at best skis for this season, and in future episodes, we're going to be looking at the best ski boots, helmets, goggles, gloves, and socks. As regular listeners will know, episodes like this take a huge amount of time to produce. So I would like to thank the sponsor of the ski podcast for this winter, the Tyrol region of Austria. If you listened to the last episode, you'll already know why Innsbruck is an amazing place to base yourself in the winter. And in future episodes, we're going to have the opportunity to find out more about some of the great destinations in Tyrol. So thanks again for their support. Now, my name's Ian Martin, but I would like to introduce a man who's going to guide us through everything I've just mentioned. Regular listeners will know him well. He is the equipment expert, not just for the Ski Podcast, but also for Full Line Magazine and The Telegraph. It is a big welcome back to Al Morgan. Hi, Al, how are you?
Morning, Ian. Thank you very much. And just giving them a big head or anything, but I've spent quite a bit of time in Innsbruck. We used to have ski tests, which we'll talk about ski tests in a bit, in Kutais. I'd go via Innsbruck a lot. And then towards the end of the time there, would drive out. And what an amazing city to be based in. So much skiing close by within half an hour, 40 minutes. It's cool. I love it. And we've got friends out there and things. So
I'm hoping, Al, that you listened to last week's episode about Innsbruck, but you've been there before. Actually, one thing I've never done, which I really like to, is ski on Nordkette. Have you done that at all?
No, me neither. I've got some friends who have, and they raved about it. But actually, there's so many like really well-known resorts within just a short hop in a car or a bus. It makes it really easy.
So today we're going to talk about best skis. Now, I just wanted to check while we're talking about skiing and skis, when were you last on snow? Because, you know, it's a question I always like to ask.
Always.
And I was thinking about this morning. You do it a lot. So when was that for you?
Well, I was thinking about this morning and I got a little bit excited about it because it was in an indoor snow, Hemel Hempstead Snow Centre. It was a demo organised. There's an instructor called Stuart Bernard who runs Ski Focus. He'd organised a demo with Rosignol and Dina Star on Atomic. And I was, solutions for feet, ski bottle, and a few other fitness guys and physio and stuff were there. But it was really popular. And what was really good was I jumped on some skis that had not been on since the season before, or even the season before that. And, you know, I'm very lucky. I get to ski in some amazing places, and I just had the best time on the hill at Hemel. It was this little jump, you just go off the side. Yeah, it's fun.
How long ago was that, Al?
2 weeks. 2 weeks ago. Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah. We don't often get to meet face-to-face, but we will be seeing each other at the London Snow Show in October. Al and I will be on the equipment stage on Saturday, the 18th of October, going through our recommendations for the best kit to look out for at the show and how to go about choosing it, making sure you pick out the right equipment for you. Basically, it'll be a version of these podcasts that we produce, but in real life. So we look forward to seeing you there. Now, before we start today, I just want to make a kind of note as to how today's show will be structured. What we're going to do is we're going to cover why certain products stand out. We're going to look at the products at the top, middle and entry levels. And we're going to try and keep the jargon to a minimum. And one other point, we're talking about the best skis for 2026. By that, I mean winter 25-26. Having said that, we want this episode to be as useful as possible to as wide a range of listeners, not just people who are into their skis already. So I do think it's important that we look at some of the key terms without going too technical. And listener, if you listen to last year's episode, some of this might sound familiar. So by all means, skip ahead. But personally, I definitely want a refresher because I'm still learning the whole time when we have these discussions. So I wondered, Al, if we could tackle a few questions. And the first one is the different types of skis. I wondered if you could just kind of clarify in terms of the categories that we're looking at, what's the difference between the different types of skis?
It's always interesting when you categorize skis because there's so much overlap. I think that's worth pointing out. So some brands will just have an all mountain line, and within that, they might have all mountain and piste. And some brands don't have all mountain at all. They might call it all terrain. But these are generally the broad terms that people tend to use. So we're going to focus on piste, all mountain and free ride. Of course, there are freestyle skis and race skis. And within those, there are other subcategories and genres and niche products. And of course, there's touring, which we're not talking about today. And again, there's loads of categories within that. So if we're focused on piste, all mountain and free ride, Piste is a pretty obvious one. Hopefully people know what a piste is, a groomed slope marked by lollipops down the side or you know, sticks or however that resort chooses to mark it. But they're prepared by, and safeguarded by the resort. And then free ride at the other end tends to be your fatter. So when I talk about fatter, we're talking predominantly, specifically talk about waist width underfoot, but a piste ski is generally going to be in the region of 63 millimeters where you stand on the ski, across the width of the ski, up to 75, 85 millimeters for some of the wider body piste skis. Free ride, some people will call these powder skis, and rightly so, because these are your skis when you're going to be spending most of your time off piste, going to go and get the holy grail of the powder snow. But you're going to have loads of varied in there. So some of them will be going from mid 80 millimeters underfoot up to 120 millimeters and more. You know, there have been skis that have been over 140 millimeters underfoot, but they're a lot more specialist than we're not talking about them today. And then that middle ground all mountain, which is arguably the most popular, certainly in the UK, the most popular category of skis. So people often talk about a one ski quiver. You're going to get one ski to do it, everything on piste, off piste, maybe go through the park. That's your all mountain. They are definitely more piste focused in my mind, because otherwise you'd be looking at free ride. Waist width, generally 75 millimeters up to 90, 100 millimeters. One of the skis we'll talk about today is 100 millimeters underfoot and is an all mountain ski. Perform really well on groomed snow, great in the bumps, in the variable off the side. And if you're going to do a bit of side country, just, you know, off the piste to the sides, all mountain skis are superb.
Okay, well, that makes a lot of sense. I like the one ski to rule them all, kind of making me think of a Lord of the Rings type of ski that you need to take with you. So, okay, you mentioned that width underfoot. You know, I actually made some notes, 63 to 75, you know, piste, 70 to 100, let's say all mountain, 80 to 120, for example, for free ride. How important is that figure for width under your foot? How much difference is it going to make to you when you're skiing?
Right. There's an amazing skier, a chap called Mark Jones, who I've skied with for a long time and tested over 1,000 skis with. He's got an amazing feel with skis, but his line is always, the ski is not a crutch. And pivot example, I went and hiked a ridge with my son. There was a little cornice, and we went and dropped in and skied this beautiful big powder slope, and both of us were on skis that were 65 millimeters underfoot. So waist width is an indication of what a ski might prefer to do. A narrower ski is going to be more twitchy, it's going to be quicker edge to edge, and it is, depending on the construction and the shaping, because there's so many factors, a narrower ski will give you better grip on firm snow typically. But you can ski 120 mil underfoot ski on piste, you can ski a 65 mil ski off piste. But yeah, it's a really handy way when we're testing of compartmentalizing ski ranges, because every brand has their own term around what an all mountain is, what a free ride. So that's why piste skis will generally go 65 to 85. So yeah, narrow ski, quicker edge to edge, will be a bit more twitchy. That mid body ski gives you a bit more float and varied snow, still good grip. You're not sacrificing that too much, and more stable. And then a wider ski, especially on deeper days, spring slush, great example. A wider ski is going to give you loads more float, less tiring. And at the end of the day, we ski because it's fun. And that's what this is about.
And yeah, it makes it a bit easier as well. You know, again, I can't kind of thinking back, but I'm thinking back to some of those, you know, great movies like P-Tex, Lies and Duct Tape, or Blizzard of Oz. Yeah, when Scott Schmidt and Glenn Plate were skiing in that movie, what kind of width were they skiing on?
Yeah, skinny skis. Fat skis didn't, you know, the 120 skis didn't exist then. So as you know, that phrase, the ski is not a crutch, people who have the skill can use anything. I certainly don't. I am not a world-class skier at all. But it's amazing how versatile, especially with modern ski shaping, skis can be.
Okay, well, you mentioned shaping then, so let's just move on to that. What do we mean by side cut? Because we're going to be referring to the side cut. I think you've already done it. So can you help people understand what we're talking about there? You talk about the width under the foot. It's related to that, isn't it?
That's part of, it's not really a calculation. Take side cut as with length, as with width, all these things, they are indicators. Take them all with a little bit of a pinch of salt. Don't obsess over them. A normal rectangular plank of wood on the floor, cut a curve in the side. That side cut is what we're talking about. So a ski is typically, not always, but the vast majority of skis are narrow in the middle, widest in the front, what we call the shovel or tip, and then in the tail, they're a bit skinnier than the shovel, but not as narrow as the waist. So if you've got a narrow point to wider points, it creates a curve. Lay the ski on its edge, that forms a turn, an arc in the snow, and that'll give us the turn figure. Take it with a pinch of salt, but tight turning skis, you know, a World Cup slalom ski, you're talking kind of 12 and a half, 13 meter turn radius. A big mountain ski with a very straight side cut, as we would refer to it, so a more drawn out turn, will be 20 plus meters. And then you go into the downhill world and the GS world of racing when you're talking 40 plus meters. So yes, you can get a big turny ski and do a tighter turn, but it'll be harder to do. And yes, you can get a very turny ski with a very pronounced side cut, a short turn radius, and ski longer turns, but it'll want to be more reactive. It'll want to turn.
We're thinking, presumably, piece skis are much more likely to have that shorter side cut than, for example, a free ride ski.
Interesting. Yeah, specific piece skis. So slalom skis, definitely. A lot of piece skis might sit around the 15 to 20 meter turn radius. And actually, you'll see a lot of free ride skis down at 16 meters turn radius. So there's a huge amount of overlap. But yeah, certainly that really tight figure of around 12 and a half, some are smaller than that, is the domain of piece skis.
Okay. Earlier, you mentioned Rocco. You said that was an innovation that came in around the time of the millennium, I think you said. Yeah. There. What is the Rocco?
Right. Okay. So originally, my knowledge of the first ski, it was to do with Shane McConkie, a legend of skiing. People will have heard of him. And one of the prototype skis, there was a screw put in the front of the ski, a bit of string, if you want, attached to the shovel, pulled and wrapped around this screw, if you want. That's a nice way of thinking about it. So it pulls the front of the ski up in a bend, not just the shovel, but pulls it back. And that is kind of how it was born. It was, the innovation was inspired by water skis. But you know a rocking horse, yeah? It's got this big curved rocker on the front. That's exactly what a rocker is trying to emulate. And some skis have a full rocker. So you put the ski on the floor, only the very middle is touching the floor, and every other bit of ski is lifted off the ground. Now, most skis have something called camber. So when you put a ski flat on the floor, as you would stand on it, towards the front, the shovel, and towards the back, the tail, will be on the floor, and the middle will be off the ground. That's called camber. And how far that contact point with the ground is from the tip and tail, the very extremes, that will give you an indication of how long that rocker is. And one of the beautiful things, it's not just about powder skiing, it's on loads of powder skis. When you put a ski on its edge and pressure it, the whole ski bends. So if you give that ski that bend already, it helps start that turn. It stops them being too grabby. It releases out the turn more easily. It makes the skis more versatile, and it's pretty ace tech.
And while this might be opening a whole can of worms, how does that actually work then? How do you design a ski so that the front of it is, you know, rocking up a little bit like that? You know, there's no bit of string attached to anything.
No, no.
Do you, the components within the ski itself?
It's to do with the mold and how they make the ski, how they cut the core. So a ski is not just one piece of material with a colourful graphic on the top and a black slidey base. There's lots and lots of layers. So often people will talk about sandwich construction, and I'm not going to go too in-depth because it would be here all day. But you think of a sandwich stack, yeah? So you've got your bread on the bottom, lots of layers in the middle and bread on the top. Now, the bits in the middle, that filling, is the magic of most skis, and that's called the core. And there'll generally be wood in there. There can be some metal. There's going to be some sort of resin. There's a lot of bio resins used nowadays, which is fantastic. There'll be some sort of composite like fiberglass or carbon. Most skis will have fiberglass in it. So if you create a mold, so the thing that the ski is shaped in, and you make that wood core have that bit of bend and it goes in there. You can even have the wood cores flat and it goes in and gets resined with the curve up to give it different bits of energy. There's all sorts of things you can do. But it's created in that shape, in the mold. That's the easiest way to think of it. Massive pressure, loads of heat, and everything sets as in the shape that you want it.
Oh, I like the sandwich idea. Right, here's a big question then. Anyone who's rented skis, you know, will probably have wondered about this, because if you go into the shop and the hire shop says to you, right, what length skis do you want? Sometimes they'll just size you up and ask you how good you are and give you a pair of skis. But it's even more important if you're buying. So here's a big question. How long should your skis be?
Okay, if you don't care, just go for middle of the face, the top of the face. There you go. Dead easy, okay? But I care. So, yeah, you know, if you're going to hold the ski stood with the tail on the floor, most people are going to get a ski that's somewhere around head height. Now, that's quite a big area. Is that 20 centimeters above? Is that 5 centimeters below? Some of the fastest skiers in the world will be on a ski that's 155 or 165 centimeters long. And most of those men and women are taller, so they can go very fast on a short ski. Now, it will depend a bit on what you are going to do. So if you're going to ski at 50, 60 miles an hour down a big Alaskan face and throw yourself off cliffs because you're a loon, a long ski is going to help you on landing, let's face it, because you're not going to be centered every time you land. If you're going to ski a slalom gated course on a World Cup race series, you're going to want a short, turny ski. So short skis will generally turn quicker. Longer skis will generally have a bigger turn shape, depending on the radius, depending on the profile and construction. So, yeah, piece skis typically a bit shorter, but if you're going to ski fast and big arcs, they will go a bit longer. Go on, you could go on about this all day. The main thing to consider are speed you're going to ski, your skiing ability, your weight, because it's about pressure through the ski. Ski can only feel the pressure. It doesn't see if you're tall. It doesn't see if you're short. It feels how much pressure you're putting through it. And that's going to cause the edge to lose grip and break away, or the ski to sink in powder. So if you're light and you ski very, very tentatively and slowly, a long ski is going to be really hard to turn. If you're, you know, the same height, but very, very powerful, and you're quite a stocky, well-built person, and you're in a really stiff boot, and you're really driving that ski, a bit more edge contact on the snow will help with grip, and it will help with float off piste. So, yeah, anywhere from chin, maybe mid-chest, up to core, a good amount above your head.
Okay, well, the main guideline that will probably be relevant to most of our listeners is between, you know, top of face and bottom of face. I do know that we have people who listen to the podcast who ski World Cup races or ski very aggressively and ski fast. I don't know that we've got anyone listen to podcasts. He's a loon who's going to be skiing down faces in Alaska. Possibly a couple of people I could think of might be trying that. Maybe that would be on people's bucket list, but that's still really useful.
The main thing to add in is, if you're renting, if you're buying, have an honest conversation with the person that's helping you in the shop, because they are the people that are going to get you on the right product. It's in their interest to get you on the right length ski and the right type of ski. Go and talk to them. Bend their ear. Have a good chat, but be honest about you and your skiing.
Cool. Okay. Now, another thing that we cover... I cover a lot in the ski podcast anyway, but we've covered in all of our equipment episodes is that sustainability aspect. It's a, you know, big part of the conversation. Is that still part of the brand's focus? Are they still looking at new innovations? And is there anything particularly to look out for this year?
More than ever, absolutely. And it's not just one or two doing bits and bobs. You know, we've spoken about various brands. Rosignol had their essential ski, so really intent that it was going to be recyclable, build a recycled materials. But we're seeing so much more recycled material being used in skis, metal laminates using recycled materials, sidewalls, bases, top sheets. And we're moving more and more away from petrochemical-based laminates in the ski. So Dynastar with their Hybrid Core 2.0, for example, where they use... So wood has a grain in it, and if you align those grains in different planes, so horizontally, vertically, longitudinally, then what they found is they can actually enhance the performance of the ski, but reduce how much resin they put in, especially if you're using a petrochemical base as opposed to bioresin. Are bioresins that sustainable? That's a whole other conversation. But they're reducing fiberglass, reducing resin. Yeah, it's so good to see. There is a long way to go on this journey. Absolutely, there is. But, you know, K2, for example, with their bioresins that they're using, they're finding that the skis The bioresin is given a much more consistent flex across temperatures. It's more durable through the temperature variations we're seeing in over a season. This is amazing. We're looking at materials that are better for the planet, but actually much better for our skiing as well. It's a win-win.
Yeah. And are brands kind of working together on these ideas, or is it someone comes out with an innovation and then the other brands try and work out how they can copy it? Is there any way of, you know, do they make an effort to share that information?
Bits of both. 5 years ago, it was pretty rare to have brands talking about sharing ideas with each other. Now, it's weird, eh? Because we look at so many different seasons. So if we look at the last two seasons that we've had, there was a ski sustainability forum. So there's FESI, the European Federation of these Sports Industries, Atomic, Power Protect Our Winters. They'd organized this forum, as I say, and loads of brands got involved, way more than they thought were going to get involved. And then it happened again last season. So I didn't know whether it was just going to be a one-year thing, but it happened again last season. And in this, they are able to share these ideas. Because manufacturing on this scale is a very complex beast. So they're all facing similar challenges. And one of the problems that we see, and we saw this with Gore-Tex moving to EPE, scalability in these new technologies is one of the challenges. So it's brilliant that they are all coming together, sharing their learnings, and that is going to push things forward at a much quicker pace.
Cool. Okay, that's really interesting and encouraging as well. Just coming to the end of our conversation about the terms and that before we look at the skis themselves, but I think it might be useful for our listeners to know how you know so much about these skis already. You know, when and where did you test them? And I know there's a really long lead time. We're talking about skis that are just coming into the shops now, but some of these you skied on like years ago, right?
Some of them will be over a year ago, absolutely. And we're just talking about new products. Obviously, some products have been in ranges for years, so we'll have skied them for years. So there's an organization in the UK called the SIGB, the Snowsport Industries of Great Britain, and there's a committee. And then there's lots and lots of members, which are brands, trade brands. There are retailers, travel companies, all sorts of people, you know, all the key players within, certainly within snow sports goods are members of the SIGB. There's a trade show in the UK that happens in early January at the minute, where media, brands, retailers all come together and look at products and that kind of thing, which is really useful. And then at the end of January last winter, we all basically moved the whole shebang to La Clusaz in France, home of Candide Torex, if people know who that is, and hopefully they do. And we get to ski on the product. But that's 5 days of pretty intense testing. It's amazing how much kit you can get through, but that wouldn't be enough to do it all. So yeah, even, you know, as I say, a couple of weeks ago in Hemel Snow Center, whenever I'm away, even with a family, I'm testing products. Anybody I ski with will generally, same with you. We met up in teen last year and I gave you some bits to test. Anybody that I ski with, and because I have to try and learn about so much and there's no point just me testing it. I work with a very talented young skier called Fionn Townsend, who tests a lot of the ladies' kit for me. I test with the whole four-line crew as well. So that's a good way of getting through a lot of stuff. Yeah. But I've been doing it for a long time, you know, so you pick up bits and bobs as you go through, as it were.
So whenever there's an opportunity to get on snow, you're out on them. So that's really interesting. One more question then. You know, when we get into the best skis for this year, I've noticed that when we come to the price, quite a few of them come without bindings. So if someone's listening and their ski sounds great, how much do they need to be budgeting in on top of the ski for a binding?
Yeah, it depends what you're going to be doing. Touring is arguably the most expensive binding segment in skiing, where you can easily go £400-£600 for binding. But you're typically going to be spending somewhere £100-£200 for a binding. obviously there's a range in this, there's stuff outside of the, that, but yeah, there's essentially two main ways of attaching binding to a ski. You can integrate a system into the ski, and we call that a system setup. So it will have either a plate pre-mounted on top of the binding slides onto, or rails built into the ski. We've had pins through the ski with a pilot system from Salon years ago. There's been ways to do it. And then you get a ski, when you put it on the floor, it's completely flat on the top. We call this flat deck. And you screw holes into the ski and drill holes into the ski and screw the binding into those holes. So when we say a ski comes without a binding, you can call it naked or flat, and that's all the same thing we're talking about.
Okay. So that answers that question. And I think when we go through the skis, then we'll just clarify whether they're flat or whether they include a binding or not.
Yeah.
So that is the setup. Let's move on to your pick then for the best skis. And we talked about the different categories. And so to start off with then, we're going to look at the best piece skis for 2026.
I think
you picked out two here, one in the women's category and one in the men's. So which one do you want to start with?
So we're going to go, I'll follow the same theme through each category. I'll go women's then men's. K2 has a new range of piece skis. It's all a bit of a blur. Sorry, terrible pun. The range is called Blur, and they make some phenomenal products. So what they do, especially in a couple of the lady skis, the 79 and the 74, they have their wood core, their Aspen wood core, and they mill channels in the core to reduce weight, get the flex characteristic that they want, etc. The 74 is the narrower version. You can get it in lengths from upper 140, so 148 to 169 centimeters long. And it's £600 with a binding. But yeah, I am not a female skier. I get the ski on female products. It's great. I am the wrong build. But Fionn just said how silky smooth this ski was. What was amazing was she was so enamored about it and the fact that it was so easy to ski. Yet, you know, she's an ex-racer. She's a ski coach. She's a free ride athlete. I mean, she's in this season's Warren Miller film. She's an amazing skier. She came in seeing how easy it is to ski, yet how much performance she could get out of it. And it just, like, just watching her ski on it, it's just that so smooth, so reactive. She could pivot it, do short turns on it. It's pretty cool. Huh? And £600 with the binding, it's not that expensive.
Yeah, that does sound like a good deal. Interesting. So I've been paying attention to what you said earlier. For piece skis, you said, typically 63 to 75. Now, this is 74 or 79. So that's quite wide underfoot for a piece ski then, right?
Well, I mean, you go up to 85 mil underfoot, the old Rossi Reacts, Atomic Qs, Salmon 4 skis. These were kind of mid-85s, head super shaped Titan, great. Piece slash all mountain ski, 85 underfoot, Vulcan Deacon 84, Vulcan Lean Phoenix. Mid-80s works well, but yeah, 74 is probably bang in the middle of the range.
That's your pick for the women's ski. It's a K2 Blur 74W, I think is the official name of the ski, standing for women. What about on the men's side of things in the piece ski category then?
Yeah. I hate names like this. They're so long. Nordica Doberman Multipista DC-FDT. That's just talking about the construction in the core and the binding system, if you want, and the last five letters. So last year they had a new ski called Multigara, Gara being race. So it top performing, almost race ski, radius across the different turn shapes. But the Multipista is new for this year. It is quite spendy. Now, there's one ski we're going to talk about today in the next category that is very spendy. But this is £930 with a binding, 160 to 185 in length. So works for men, women, works for small riders to big, powerful riders. Salomon have had a range called Addict Pro. Not a standout, but the Addict Pro, they brought out the 76 last winter. Still phenomenal skis. They are great piece skis. I waxed lyrical about them last year. I still back that. They are brilliant. But this multi-piece that is new, you look at it, and it looks almost like an all-mountain ski. They've had a range of piece product called Steadfast for a while, but they're quite curvy at the tip and tail. Not this ski. Strictly, they say it's full camber, but actually it has a bit of lift at the front and back. wood core metal in there. They've got rubber, so they have one wood core stacked on top of the other. They use poplar and beech off the top of my head in this ski, and that the layers of metal and the rubber and the wood just is sublimely smooth. And what I love about the shaping in this, because you're not so locked into a turn shape, it's so versatile on how you can ski it. And actually, you know, you can go a bit crazy on this, doing little rollers, jumps, hits, go off the side, and then you go hell for leather on the piece. Then the grip from this ski, it is electric. It's so enlivening. Hey, it was fun. You can probably hear my voice. It's a fun ski. It's really good, but it is spendy.
Yeah. So what is the price then?
930 of our finest English pounds. But that does include a binding.
Right. Okay. And just to clarify then, so Nordica, Doberman, Multipista.
Yeah. DC, well, let's stop there. DC's that core I was done about, the double core where they stack one bit of wood on top of another, have some metal, have some rubber. But yeah, Nordica, Doberman, Multipista. You can even just call it the Nordica Multipista because they don't do other versions. They just do that one Multipista ski.
Right. Okay. Does it have a Doberman on the top sheet as part of the design?
Yeah. Of course it does. It's cool, isn't it? That's good, that design. And some of the Doberman skis are amazing. They have been for so long. But this is a new ski for this year. Exciting. A little bit different from what they've done with a lot of the
Dobermans. Okay. Let's move on to the all-mountain category then. Now, you mentioned about spendy skis.
Oh, my goodness.
You did mention this to me before. We were just having a conversation, a kind of offline at a different time. This is a very special type of ski.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell us about it?
Yeah. So I know I'm going women's, men's. We're not putting it, we've got two other skis in all mountain that we're going as. These are proper hot property this season. This one is, it came out last year, didn't get to ski it last year. There are so few of them in the world. And it is so different. Not that many people are going to be able to get a hold of one. And arguably fewer people are going to want to pay for it. It's £1,750 without a binding. Sharp intake of breath. Yes, I know. It's the Volkl V-Works 100. It's available in lengths from 170 centimeters to 186. Wider end of all mountain category, arguably. Now, basically, the brief for the tech boffins at Volkl was, ignore the bill of materials, ignore the cost. Everything we've learned from skis, build the best ski you can. Now, at ski test, there was one pair of skis. They belonged to the guy that runs Volkl in the UK. There were two other people allowed to ski it. One guy called Noddy Gowans, who is an amazing skier and one of the nicest humans. Volkl, Noddy's a charger, and he's got a bit of a history of sometimes charging and you know, he's dinked a few skis. So he was told he wasn't allowed off-piste on this. I was allowed to go anywhere with it. I skied with a guy from Volkl. You know, I know him very, very well. Super nice chap. And I skied bumps in it, off-piste, drops, on-piste. And I came off the hill and he says, what do you think? And I'm like, I can't talk to you. I need a bit of time to process this. It is the ski is see-through. If you hold it up to the light, they've done this with their tips, but through the ski, you can rub your hand, you know, blocking the light behind it and see where your hand is. They use wood core in this funky shape, split down the middle, and they've used tailored carbon fiber in skis for a while now with massive success. I mean, their Deakin V-Works was and is, now it's called the Peregrine V-Works, an amazing ski, but they just take it to the next level, this ski. It is unbelievable. Ski on piste, it feels like it's a mid-70s piste blaster, go off piste, float. Unbelievable.
Yeah, you said the price was £1,750.
Yeah.
But that's converted, isn't it?
Yeah, 1,900.
It's actually €1,923.
Yeah. Guess how many they made? 1,923. But it is, I wouldn't be surprised if they're losing money on this ski.
There's 1,923 of them available.
Yeah.
The retail price is €1,923. Volkl was founded in 1923. Yeah. Maybe there's some listeners out there who want to get a hold of these based on your recommendation. But let's say people have more, you know, normal budgets. You said you had two other picks. What would they be?
So, ladies ski. Atomic have had an all mountain range, and I'd argue it's been a bit confusing because they've got on their piste range, they've got two types of piste ski. They've got the narrow Redster and Cloud for women, Cloud C and Redster X, if we ignore the race stuff, for men. And then they have the Redster and Cloud Q, which are their wide piste skis. And some people think of those as all mountain skis, but they're not. Atomic say they're piste skis. Then they have Maverick and Maven. They brought out fat skis. So a 115, a 105 for men, 103 for women last year. Changed shape, changed construction, changed tip and tail profile. They were amazing. They're a real step up in terms of what you want out of that kind of ski. And they got it bang on. This season, they brought it across all of their Maverick and Maven range. But the women skiing this ski and the whole four-line testing, when they're skiing this Maven 88 CTI, which is a new width in the Maven range, it uses carbon, it uses titanium metal in there, which is an aluminium alloy. Were just singing its praise and just loved it. A lot cheaper than the Volkel, £570 flat, so without a binding, available from 147 centimeters long through to 172. Rocker through the tip and tail, and in their free ride range, their Chris Benchett, amazing free ride athlete. He brought out shaping into his signature line of skis called Horizon Tech. They brought it into their touring skis. So you've got this horizontal rocker. Basically, the tip's a bit like a spoon, and they can put it in the tail as well. With these skis, they carry on the wood core right through to the tip and put the chamfer at the edge. So it still gives you that drifty free ride feel, but you've got loads of power in it, but they're not as grunty as things like the old Vantage. It was just unanimous praise for the ski from the female testers.
Oh, I love those expressions like grunty. You probably don't find them in too many ski descriptions. So that is the Atomic Maven 88 CTI, yes. 570 without bindings, flat, yes, as you flat. Said. On the men's side of things, what was your pick or what is your pick?
Oh, my. I am so glad that Salomon's found their mojo. And I know, I've their Addict Pro skis. Wow, Salomon was back on the board. That was fantastic. They've been not the most exciting ski brand for a while. With some of their boot developments, we've seen some great things in recent seasons. And for this season as well, we've got some fantastic new product. The Stance range of skis, I remember when they first brought these out. It was during the pandemic. I tested them in Glenshee with Mark Jones, who I spoke about earlier. We both got off the ski and went, core, this is something different from Salomon. This is amazing. Feel the quality, feel the energy. Feels a real premium product, but you've got that fantastic Salomon availability price point. I'm not sure they've done as well as they possibly should have done. I mean, they're amazing skis, but they've got new Stance Pros. The Stance Pro 86. I'm putting this in men's, but we have female testers on this just going, crikey, this is something special. And it is one of the most fantastic all-mountain skis. It is absolutely brilliant. On-piste, grip, drive, go off the sides, go in bumps, and you want to go and use it in powder. Yes, it's not that fat underfoot. Let's face it, 86 width isn't that wide, and it's brilliant. Yeah. Salomon Stance Pro 86. We've spoken about wood being used in the core. It's got a wood core in there. They use this, what they call PowerFlex TI, so a metal layer. It's full width underfoot, and then it tapers out as you move away from this. Put a thicker metal edge on it, giving you more grip. It's cool. It's amazing. Salomon Stance Pro 86. I mean, there's lots I can say about this. We're going forever. I'm not going to. Everybody that skied it that I was with absolutely loved it. I thought it was sensational.
Oh, and you mentioned that, you know, it could work for men and women, because I think I've got a note here saying that it's available from 151 to 185.
Yeah, yeah. So some shorter lengths, absolutely correct. Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, what's interesting, the price of that one
is $640 without. So all of these all-mountain skis, these three that we've spoken about, the Volkel, Atomic, Salomon, all flat mounts and no binding included.
Yeah. Okay. Excellent. Shall we move on to our final category then, the free ride category?
Yeah.
This is the kind of, you know, the sexy area. Maybe these are more grunty skis. I don't really know how you categorize them. But what's your pick on the women's side of things then?
Head have had a core range of skis for quite a long time, and when they brought the Core 93, all free ride skis were wider. Mid 100s, and then they brought out a Head Core 93, and he was skiing it in some shoots off the side of Kutai and some deep powder down through some trees and just going, this is giving way more performance than any 93 ski should. And they were brilliant. They've rebuilt these skis, redesigned them for this year. New profiles. Yeah, some of the lengths are the same as last year's. So this is the Head Core 99 TI Women's. So Core is the model range. 99 is the width. TI, because it has titanium metal, and W, because it's a woman's ski. It's £650 without a binding. So again, flat mount. Pretty much all. I can't really think of any free ride ski that system off the top of my head very quickly. All flat mounts. So £650 comes it from a 156 centimeter length up to 177. Now, the ladies' skis, apart from the graphic, ladies are white with various colors in, and the men's are darker color. They build them differently. So you can get the Core skis from 87 to 104. They used to have a 97. This is 99 mil underfoot, so we stepped up a bit in width for the women's. But in the women's skis, they do a poplar wood core, and they combine it with something called PET, which is polyethylene terephthalate. And I can hardly say that properly. The easiest way to think of this is if you have a fleece, it's using recycled material in there. It's generally made from pop bottles, that kind of thing. They are often just made of PET. But anyway, synthetic material in there. It's got poplar, and they build the lady skis different to that, to how they build the men's skis, as I say, because they've got this PET, this thermoplastic polymer in the skis. They do add carbon in. It's called graphene. It was discovered in Manchester. It's this mega techno innovation, one atom thick layer of carbon, but they put that in there to give you a bit more energy, stability, etc., without adding loads of weight. And the female skiers just came off it, and they were the Core men's are great, but the women were so much more energized by the women's Core skis. It was incredible.
It sounds very high tech to have graphene in there, which I have heard of, this incredibly thin layer. Is that not super expensive, that element?
They've been using it for a long time. They use it in boots, they use it in skis. Think of it as another carbon layer with a tech name, a bit like titanium is an alloy but with a brand name. Yeah, I mean, this ski has metal in it as well. It's got titanium metal in there as well. You've got good rocker through the front and back for that float, for that playfulness, but you have those other tech layers, that metal, that graphene in there. You've got brilliant stability in this ski. Yeah, it's pretty cool. They look amazing as well.
So moving on to the men's skis then, I think you're coming back to Salomon again for your free ride choice.
Yeah, and this isn't just a Salomon show, but they, as I say, they have found their flow. Stance Pro 86, sensational mountain ski, and now they've gone and done it. QST skis, again, have been around for a long time, big following. I bought a pair of QST skis a long time ago, put a shift binding on it, use it for so much skiing, it's brilliant. Oh my, I'm going to have to spend more money because the new QSTs are unbelievable. Get them in two colors. They're unisex. And I love that we're seeing this. Really, the main brand that I think of as starting this kind of trend was K2. But loads of brands are doing this now. I have unisex, certainly in touring, free ride, and in some all mountain. Less so possibly in piste. Unisex skis, two colorways. Both exactly the same length option. So it goes from 148 centimeters, which is quite a short free ride ski, up to 188 centimeters long. It's £570 without a binding. Unbelievable. Honestly, you think 100's not that wide, and it isn't that wide. You know, we spoke about the V-Works 100 being that wide on the front. This thing, we had some amazing snow in La Clusaz, and this thing, the float out of it is phenomenal. And then you've got to get back to the base. You're getting on the groomers. This is a proper free ride style all mountain ski. I mean, it is. God, it's amazing to go and ski like this off piste, and then be able to get in some bumps, do some drops, get back on the piste if you want. Yes, you could put a shift, a Duke PT, an ATK high, something on this, but most people are going to fit it with a regular downhill off or regular downhill style free ride binding, and just go hiking lines, skiing anywhere you want, resort. But with your focus being on off piste, the QST 100 is truly brilliant.
And does QST stand for anything?
So they used to have Quest product, and then they had QST products. I think it's just been an evolution of that. It's not an initialism as far as I'm aware. Wood core in this ski. Yeah, they put this TPU, so again, a thin plastic polymer, around the tip and tail. So they use cork in these skis to help soak up vibrations. Again, it's another good way of doing it without using petrochemical-based products. They've used corked amplifier for a while now. Really smooth, surprising amounts of edge grip. Really easy to get various chain shapes on it. If you want to go and ski backwards, yes, you can. That's not what it's designed for. But it's just mega playful, mega fun. And I love that we are seeing this more and more in skiing. The products are just putting a bigger grin on everybody.
I love the enthusiasm that you bring into all of this. So it's making me think about the testing as well. I know you said you were in the snow dome, the snow center a little while ago. But presumably, can you only test piece skis in the snow center in an indoor snow slope, or is it feasible to test kind of all mountain or free ride skis in that environment?
No, you can absolutely. The biggest challenge that you have in any indoor snow dome or hill center, whatever you want to call, because some of these are brand terms, there are some longer ones in outside of the UK, but in the UK, the biggest challenge, especially for skis quite beefy construction, is when you are trying to get the pace into the ski to get it to bend, that is harder because you might be at the bottom of the hill by then. But my best run at the hill was on an all mountain ski. It was 88 underfoot, Rosie Arcade 88, brilliant ski, and just lit me up. So absolutely. And I was skiing skis that were 100 mil underfoot in there, and that's fine too.
Yeah. And what about, you're saying a lot of the testing is in La Clusa.
And, it was then.
Okay, fantastic. When you're on the Volcal Works and the chap there is trusting you to ski on a 2,000 euro ski, I presume there must have been a reasonable amount of snow. But what if you go out for that test week and you don't have all of those conditions? Can you really test a free ride ski if it's, let's say, a poor snow week?
Yes, you can. The perfect example is the season before when we got out there. I'm going to tap on the table. There's going to be a bang. Sorry. And it was that. I'm not kidding. It was rock solid, the piece. And the term ice gets overused. I'm not going to use that. It was very, very hard packed snow. Off piece was really firm, hard. And it amazes me that Candide was still training and going full send, because this was suboptimal conditions, being polite. And you know what? Testing skis in those conditions is better than having 2 or 3 foot of powder. Any ski can ski 2 or 3 foot of powder and feel amazing. You can't actually tell that much about what the ski's doing apart from it floats, it sinks, you know? Having challenging conditions, the conditions that people struggle with, that's when it highlights the weakness of skis. So it's better to have more challenging conditions. It's not as much fun, don't get me wrong. It is not as much fun. And it is harder to test the powder aspect of skis, but any ski can ski powder.
Yeah, I like as well that it sounds to me you're suggesting there that you can blame your skiing on the ski and not the skier. It's like not performing in the conditions that you need. I say to my kids who think they're quite good at skiing, look, you need to ski in all conditions. That's when you're going to get to be a better skier.
Yeah.
But, if you have the right ski, it's obviously going to help. I've got one other question. Just in relation to testing. I mean, you've got so much knowledge and enthusiasm for the different skis, but you're testing a lot. Like, I don't know how many skis did you ski on in La Clusa over those
days? Most ski weeks. So let's say we have 4.5 days of testing. I do longer because I go out earlier. But just in that 4.5 days, you can get through between... It depends on the tester. Typically between 30 and 60 skis. I know some people that get through 100 skis. I'd argue they're not really testing the skis that much. But that's not for media. That's generally for retailers when they're just confirming what they think about a ski. But, yeah, I will do 35, 45 pairs of skis in a week, plus I don't know how many pairs of boots, goggles, helmets, outfits. There's a lot of changing.
Okay.
A lot of changing.
So when you do that, do you get to the bottom and then – make notes immediately on your observations?
So with all my testers, I will encourage them to ski on at least 2 or 3 skis before they make any notes. They can make a little, okay, I'm going to put my notes about this. I might put 1 or 2 bullet points just to remind me. And so let's say we're testing pieced. We will stick to the same terrain on all of those piece skis, and we'll do all of the piece skis on the same day. So you remove as many variables as possible. So you look at the forecast for the week. Okay, Thursday is going to be powdery. Monday is going to be sunny, and we know they've had good grooming on following the weekend traffic. So you can plan that way, and that's kind of how you do it. And it's amazing, certainly if people have really good experience in testing product, they're good at it, they have a good feel, very you get some amazing skiers who are terrible testers, and you get some amazing testers who are not the world's best skiers at all. It's their feels that's important, how they can communicate the difference in the skis. And yes, you will make notes in the lift as you go, because the lift might be 15 minutes to go up.
Okay, I'm trying to keep this under an hour, but I'm really interested in these things. What about the practicalities of taking notes then? It can often be snowing or whatever. So are you kind of doing audio notes on your phone, or are you actually writing things down? Or do you have like a test sheet where you have, you know, the same categories for each type of ski?
Yeah, so for over 20 years, I've used pencil, because pencil will work when it's snowing. And I have test cards that I design, that I use, and I have used for a long time. The SIGB, the Snowsport Industry Great Britain, who organise the test, they have an app. So in that, you can make notes as well. And I, on my phone, I will do voice notes or type notes, often voice notes, because I might have a glove on. I've got all of these things I can pull on when I get back, and then I've still got records of everything. All the testers, I get their notes that they've either handwritten and or put in the app. I get all of that information.
Well, evidently there's a huge amount of information to collate, and I know when the full line gear guide comes out, you got over 500 items of different ski gear to cover in there. But I really appreciate you sharing all of your knowledge with us on the skis today. I'm just going to come to the close. As a reminder, listeners, if you can make it to the London show on Saturday, the 18th of October, you can meet Al and myself. We're going to be on, I think, at 10:30 on the equipment stage, going through the recommendations for the best kit and our tips for how you pick it out. Basically, it'll be a version of these podcasts, but in real life. Now, I enjoy all feedback about the show. So if you enjoyed this episode or have any questions about skis we didn't cover, then please let us know by leaving a comment at Instagram or Facebook. We are at the Ski Podcast, or by dropping me an email at theskipodcast@gmail.com. There are now 273 episodes of the Ski Podcast to catch up with, and 133 of those were listened to in the last week. To listen to our back catalogue, just go to theskipodcast.com, search around the tags and categories, and you're bound to find something of interest to you. In the last week, 60% of our listeners were in the UK, 16% in the States, and everyone else spread as far and wide as Greece, South Korea, and Chile. If you enjoyed this episode and like to help, there are three things you can do. You can follow us and subscribe, so you never miss an episode. You can give us a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And if you're booking ski hire this winter, don't forget you can help Ski Podcast and save some money on your ski hire by using the code SKIPODCAST when you book at insportrent.com. You get a guaranteed additional discount, or you can take the link in the show notes for your discount to be automatically applied. You can follow me at Skipedia. You can follow us on WhatsApp for exclusive material released ahead of each podcast. Look in the show notes for that link. I'd like to thank you, Al, for your time today.
Thank you, Ian. This has been a lot of fun.
We'll be back in 2 weeks' time with a look at the best ski boots for this winter. And next week, we'll be finding out about the Ski Ural area of Interol, Austria. Don't know if I pronounced that correctly. We'll find out next week. So until then, thank you for joining us, listener, wherever in the world you're listening right now. And until next time, goodbye.